If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn. I'm your host. My guest today is Laura Formentini. She is an author, nonprofit photographer, and trauma recovery advocate who has worked all over the world with countless NGOs and seemingly ordinary people who have accomplished the extraordinary for more than 15 years. Her world collapsed when, while working on one of her books in Ethiopia, she received the news that her son had taken his own life on the other side of the planet in Denver, Colorado. A stranger helped her through the hardest day of her life by holding her hand all day until it was time for her to fly back to the U.S. by herself, saying that he wasn't doing anything special because it was his human responsibility. Laura has become a passionate advocate of how selfless human acts of kindness can help change the world. The stranger's act of kindness prompted her to write her upcoming book, 21 Olive Trees, A Mother's Walk Through the Grief of Suicide to Hope and Healing. That book received an endorsement from Deepak Chopra, and she dedicated the book to her son and all the empaths in the world as she reminds others of the importance of holding each other's hand during hard times and asking the world to join her in this effort to retrieve our intrinsic humanness. Please help me welcome Laura Formentini. Laura, how are you?
Hi, Ari. I'm really well. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. How you been? What's going on? Everything good?
Well, yeah, everything great. I'm launching the book 21 Olive Trees in 2 months. And so I'm in the midst of working with various bookstores and putting together my book tour, both in the US and in Europe for next year. So pretty busy.
Wow. That's great. Yeah. That's great. Thanks so much for coming on the show as my guest. You know, as you know, the name of the podcast is Whispers and Bricks, and the whispers are those voices telling us what the right thing to do is, and they represent the good in life. And the bricks represent the bad things that we go through in life. And let's be real, we all go through some, we all get hit with some sort of a brick at one point in time or another in our lives, some with more, some with less, some bigger, some smaller, but we all go through it. Now, sure. the reason I asked you to be on the show is because after I read your story, I knew that there were people in my audience who were going through the same things that you had gone through. They've been hit with bricks, much like what you had gone through, and they needed to hear and to know that they could get through the trials and tribulations the same way that you did. They needed to know that there were whispers out there that could save them. Now, to start with, I'd like you to share with my audience, like, what was life like growing up, and how did you decide on becoming a professional photographer?
So growing up, I grew up in Italy, and I left my country when I was about 20 years old, and I was very passionate about archaeology because I really wanted to travel, and I've always been very curious and interested in culture in general, and I just wanted to explore the world. And so I was an archaeologist for quite a bit. Until my travels really taught me how much disproportion there was between rich and poor in the world. And so I slowly left the archaeology to become a photographer. And I became a photographer. First, it was kind of like a passion, and then it turned into a profession. And I decided to work with nonprofits and really capture their day-to-day life and see how, you know, really capture their grit, their perseverance, and how no matter what, you know, a lot of people keep going. And so I've worked with orphanages and communities and animal welfare organizations. And so I still was able to travel, of course, but it was more of a travel with a purpose. So I kept this desire to travel all over the world, and I incorporated the purpose. And so I was able to work with wonderful people who've helped me to really realize that we are all the same in the end. Doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. We all need the same things. And, you know, love is always at the base. And it's really the force that keeps us strong. And can love is really something that can change the world in a big way. And so that's what I've been through for the past 15 years.
Are you married?
I was. I'm in a relationship. Yeah.
Okay. But you were in, yeah. Okay. I don't want to ask the hard, hard questions, so I won't.
Go ahead. That's fine. That's fine.
I mean, when, okay. I'm just, I've never been stumped for words before. Okay. So, so let me ask you this. So you were in Ethiopia when you had this major brick thrown at you. Now, right. were you married at that time?
I was not married. I was in a relationship, and it's still the same relationship.
Okay. So, So, but you did, obviously you did have a child.
Yes. And he was currently with his family in the States, working for the summer. And he was 21 at the time. So he was in Colorado at the time while I was in Ethiopia. And I thought things were going fine till I received the call. And obviously, I had to drop everything that I was doing and cut short my trip in Africa and frantically find a way to get back to the States on the same day. And
now, how old were you at that point? If you don't mind me asking.
I'm sorry?
How old were you at that point?
How old was I? I was 47.
47. Okay. And you were traveling. You were in Ethiopia. You were by yourself, I'm assuming.
Well, I was by myself. Yes, not really. I was by myself. I didn't have anybody from the States with me. I had connected with a group of locals in Ethiopia who were helping me to discover stories of transformation from other local people, how they made it through their lives and what their life was like previous, before. Basically, I was just collecting stories of inspirational, transformational stories. And so what happened was I had to cut short my trip and find this flight to go back to the States.
Right. Before we go on to that. Okay. What I'd like to know is, and I'm sure my ears like to know, do you have any, you were on, some sort, not a fact-finding mission, so to speak, but more of, interesting stories of, of, I guess, of kindness or, you know, the human, emotion and the like.
Sure.
Is there any story that sticks out in your mind, from that period?
Sure. Well, I spoke with several mothers who had lost their children in childbirth, for instance, and they were discussing how they had made it through thanks to their families, thanks to their friends, and how it had impacted their lives severely, but also how they had come out of that situation by helping out other mothers who were going through it. So that was something that happened. I had interviewed especially one mother who had gone through this the day before I had received the call. So that helped me tremendously because she had so much grit and perseverance. And she was recounting her story to me. And it was incredible to talk to this woman who seemed completely healed after having lost, I believe, 3 children in childbirth.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And was that just because of a lack of proper medical facilities or?
Yes. And she actually lived in a rural area, and in the rural area, unfortunately, they don't have enough. They don't even have the proper surgical instruments. They don't have enough beds. A lot of times the beds are just beat up mattresses and, you know, in the hospitals. I mean, and so it's there's a lot of times you'll find complete lack of hygiene, and it's It's very, and Ethiopia is one of the poorest countries in the world as well. So it's very common, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess we have the setting here. All right. You're in a very, very poor country. Their life expectancy obviously isn't great. You're trying to do the best you can, trying to help as many people as you can, gathering stories, taking photos, trying to make the world a better place. And you're doing everything you can. And then you get that phone call. Tell us what that was like, please.
Well, that's obviously a phone call that shattered my world completely. And what happened was I had to find a flight to go back and on the same day. And it was not easy because I was in the rural Ethiopia at the time. Okay. And so from the rural Ethiopia, I had to find a driver who'd take me to Addis Ababa, which is the capital.
Right.
And then I couldn't find anything that was just one connection. I had to actually go from Addis Ababa to Dublin, Ireland to Boston, and then from Boston all the way back to Denver. And you're talking about a 35-hour trip. It was insanely long, but that's all I found for the same day. And so I booked it. So I was there with a group of people, Ethiopians, who helped me to book my flight back. But nobody could fly back with me. Nobody had a passport. And so I took that flight by myself.
What year was this?
This was in 2019. It was August 2019.
Okay.
So it was almost 2.5 years ago. And so the tour leader, she told me, listen, nobody can be with you all day long until the flight departs, and nobody can come back with you to the States because nobody has a passport. But there's a friend of mine who has volunteered to be with you all day until your departure. And so this person was a complete stranger. His name's Asefa. He's from Addis Ababa. And comes from a very poor family, and his wife was very pregnant at the time. And he volunteered to be with me all day long. And so I met him, and he met me as I was shivering and shaking. I didn't know, how am I going to do this? How am I going to fly, all the way back there by myself after having got through this? And so he meets me, I'm shivering. He holds my hand right away. And he says to me, you're okay, Laura. You're okay, sister. You're going to be okay with me. And so he held my hand all day long. You're talking about 10 hours. This is a stranger, complete stranger. And he kept checking in with me every 10 minutes or so. And he kept asking, are you okay? And then, are you okay, sister? So it's almost like we had a brotherhood, a sisterhood right away. I didn't know him, but it's almost like I had known him forever. And it was the same for him. And so it's incredible. He took me to lunch. He took me to an archaeological museum, knowing that I liked archaeology. That was my passion. And so held my hand all day long. And he took me to the airport that evening. And when it was time to board, I asked him, I said, why did you do all of this for me? You don't even know me. And all he said was, I didn't do anything special, Laura. It was my human responsibility. So those words, believe me, stayed with me. And his presence filled my soul. I was able to fly back thanks to his presence, thanks to his kindness, thanks to his words. And there is no way I would have ever been able to make it. So he was that light that appeared out of the blue, that what they call angels, I guess. Mm-hmm. He really appeared out of the blue. And I feel that, he didn't think that he did anything special because he was his human responsibility. But what his small act of kindness really changed my world. It helped me to start healing. And so I've only seen him once, but we've kept in contact. And so we talk maybe once a week on WhatsApp or And we've kept in contact. We've kept in touch. I've told him that I would definitely help him with his business, and I would love to have him over in the States. And I'm actually preparing for a TEDx for next year, and I would love to invite him over and share the stage with him. My message is really how small acts of kindness can change the world, because it doesn't have to be anything grandiose. It can be just a small act of kindness, like what he did. But you never know the magnitude of your acts of kindness.
Right. So basically, you get hit with this major, major brick. You get a phone call that your son took his own life. And then lo and behold, the whispers start to come in the form of this gentleman who starts helping you, and his kindness, and it's just his whispers to you know, to your mind and to your heart. Okay. Beautiful. That actually helps you get through this whole tragedy. Taking you to museums to help take your mind off of the things, not that you could, but in some way, shape or form to help a little bit. And because of that, you turn around and you decide to take this tragedy and turn it into a positive.
Right.
So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So he inspired me to keep going. And again, I only saw him one time, but his presence, and he's an extremely simple man. Very kind, but very simple. He said he wasn't doing anything special, but it was just this deep, deep love that he was showing towards me that helped me to start healing. So when I went back, within like about 4 or 5 weeks of being back, obviously we had to go through all the process of, I don't even want to talk about it, but you know, after having dealt with my son's things, I started writing notes to my son and poems to my son, and you know, just like to, in a cathartic way, just to release the pain that I had inside. And then one day I decided to write a poem. A fable. And then another day I start writing as parts of an introduction. So I had no idea that this would turn into a book. It was really a writing to heal sort of thing. I've never been a fan of therapy, for instance. I've tried it a couple of times, but it never worked for me. So writing for me was extremely healing, because I was able to release all the stagnant emotions that I had inside. So I was able to let the emotion flow. Okay. And so little by little, I started meeting people who came, who crossed my path, and who would say to me, you know, this should turn into a book. This can be really positive and healing, not just for you, but also for others who are going through the same thing. And so it turned out to be a book, and it took me about 2 years to finish it. So it's a book of, has a wonderful introduction, and it's a 21 fables, because my son was 21. I decided on the title 21 Olive Trees, because the olive tree is a symbol of power, of regeneration, of strength. And you know, a lot of the, of wisdom, a lot of the qualities that my son had. My son was an empath, and I'm an empath as well. He never realized that empathy was his biggest gift. So he left before realizing that empathy can heal. And he always felt that the world was too harsh to live in for him. But so I decided to dedicate this book to him and all the empaths out there in the world, because I know what it means to be an empath. I am one. And so little by little, again, the right people showed up at the right time, the right situations materialized in a way where I was able to put a book together. And then I started sending out the book to various people, various authors, and I got this amazing endorsement from Deepak Chopra, who loved it. And so I believe that it's a book that can be beneficial for anybody who's going through some sort of personal loss, like really tragic personal loss. It doesn't have to be suicide. It can be divorce. It can be man-made or natural disasters. It can be anything that has hit you really hard. But it's my way of saying you can heal from this. You can always turn the negative into a positive. And I was able to do it thanks to an act of kindness. And the act of kindness that I received from the Ethiopian stranger, I was able to turn it around and form an act of kindness for the world. This is a gift that I'm gifting to the world. That's my act of kindness that I have created out of what was given to me in Ethiopia. So it's almost like a domino effect. It's been incredibly healing for me to meet this man for just one day. And then I'm hoping that this book will hold as many hands as possible, just like Asifa did with me.
Yeah. So it's really amazing. I'm going to tell you, when my father died, it's going on 6 years now. And he was living in Israel. I was living in the States, and I have a brother who was living in Israel. And he emailed me to tell me that my father had passed away. He had been sick, but it was funny because I spoke to my brother on a Thursday, and I said, "Is Daddy okay? Oh, do I need to come?" And he said, "No, they changed his medication and he's responding and he looks good and everything is fine." I said, "Okay." And then he passed away on Saturday.
Right.
And right. I went, when I went to Israel, so what I was doing every night, I had my laptop with me. Every night I would write about the events of the day, what was going on. And I found it to be very, very therapeutic. Right. And I was doing, it wasn't for publication. It wasn't right. for, you know, it was just my feelings yes. and things that I was thinking about. And, I forgot if I put it out on Facebook or something. I don't remember, but I do remember people telling me, "Oh, you know what? Your writing gave me such inspiration." It was
wonderful.
And that, yeah that's so I kind of know where you're coming from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, you know, mine is more of a natural order of things. Yours was not.
Right.
But again, you know, it's, I hear where you're coming from, and it's wonderful, you know, the things that you're doing. What are you up to now? You're writing a book. Are you still doing your photography? Are you still working with the nonprofits? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm doing it all. I'm I have a lot of projects that have been moving kind of slow because of COVID, but one of the big projects that I have is with Plan International, which is an organization that helps people sponsor children, and as well as they also advocate for girls' rights. So I've been sponsoring probably more than 50 children over the past 17 years with them. And I am currently partnering up with them to write a book on the positive impact of child sponsorship. So I was supposed to go last year to Nepal, Bangladesh, and India to interview the adults who had been sponsored as children to really cover their path before, during, and after sponsorship. So what kind of positive impact sponsorship has had on their lives. We are re-engaging with these countries towards the end of this year, beginning of next year. So I'll be traveling, hopefully, when these countries reopen, but we can start the interviews virtually. I'm also working on a few projects in Puerto Rico, where I've been a nonprofit photographer for three different animal welfare organizations. And I'm putting together a campaign, a free campaign of sterilization for many stray dogs in South Sicily, where I've already done a bunch of campaigns down there. There's stray dogs everywhere. So there's a lot of opportunities to be an activist. I've learned how to fundraise, and I fundraise for a lot of different organizations. And it's just my passion is to to help out and to, I really realized that we're all in the same boat. And, you know, if we are able to give some of, you know, some of our resources, be it, you know, anything, you know, just let's do it. We're all in this together. And so it's my passion to make the world a better place, or at least to try to.
The one question I didn't ask, which I should have asked at the beginning, what was your son's name?
So his name was Blaise.
And, Blaise?
Blaise, B-L-A-I-S-E.
Yeah.
And him and I were soulmates. We still are. I feel his presence. I feel his energy. And we lived together on two different countries in the States and Europe. And it was just, he was just like an incredibly sweet, generous, ultra sensitive person. We had planned to work together in the nonprofit field. In fact, he wanted to go into documentary films. And so we were very, very, very close. And I feel that it's almost like I felt his presence as I was writing this book. And it was very healing, because a lot of times I would wake up the following day after writing. Wake up the following day and I read what I had just written, and I couldn't believe, I'm like, did I really write all this? It was so beautiful. And so I feel that we are still working together, and it's just wonderful. I feel that I have healed. I do. There are days where it can be tough enough to have him here physically, but I know that it's for the greater cause. And if this book can help people to heal, to get better, to see things from a different perspective, so I believe that will be worth the pain that I went through.
Are you still in Colorado?
No, I'm actually in California.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I know that Blaise is looking down on you, and he's very proud of his mom. You know, it was, I guess, you know, God takes the people that he wants to in some way, shape or form when he wants to. And I think that, you know, it was, I think God was looking at Blaise and saying, I need you here. And Blaise said, you know what, I'm coming. And, you know, and that's what happened. But again, you know, the work that you're doing is a tribute to his memory. I think people are going to realize what kind of a boy he really, really was through your writings and through your books, et cetera. So I think it's wonderful. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with my audience before we go? Words of advice or words of wisdom?
Okay. So I would say, one of the main messages of this book is that love does not die. Okay. So the physical form might go, but the spirit does not die, which is, you know, pure love. Love does not die. And so I wanted to share this quote by Booker Washington. He was an advisor to many US presidents in the late 1800s, early 1900s. He said, one of his quotes was, if you want to lift yourself up, lift up someone else. And I believe that, you know, as our New Year's resolutions are approaching, you know, January is coming, you know, I believe that it's important to maybe realize that we can practice these small acts of kindness every day. Not knowing the magnitude of these acts of kindness. So you never know where these small acts of kindness can go, the domino effects that they can have. They might not mean much to you, but they can mean the world to someone else. So maybe as a New Year's resolution, what we could do is remember this quote by Booker Washington. If you want to lift yourself up, lift up someone else. And it doesn't have to be anything grandiose. We can start here right now, from our homes, you know, anything that is related to kindness, being kind, small acts of kindness can really change the world like it did with me.
Absolutely. Now, if people want to get a hold of you, how can they do that? You have an email, you have a website, you have, you know, how can they touch base with you?
Sure. My website is lauraformentini.com, LauraFormentini.com. I'm also on Instagram, author Laura Formentini. I'm also on Facebook at author Laura Formentini. And I am starting my book tour in January. Book will be out January 11th. It will be available on Amazon, but also it's going to be distributed to educational institutions like universities and libraries. It will be available at bookstores. So, you know, it'll be pretty much everywhere in all formats, including audiobook.
That's awesome. Yeah. Laura, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with my audience. I'm sure you've touched the hearts of many in my audience. Good luck going forward. Keep up the good work. You know, I mean, you have what to be proud of. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Shomer. Until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.